This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at zonepouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
Side by side for the lead. Hamlin on the bottom. Truex up top. Hamlin's going to run it wide. Hamlin now comes off the wall as they race off the end of the back straightaway. Cars bumping and grinding back to the corner.
Off turn four, Denny Hamlin has the lead. White flag is in the air. Next flag ends it. Hamlin by a car length. Here comes Joey Logano.
Joey Logano down to the inside of the racetrack. He'll power underneath Martin Truex Jr. He'll take second. Truex under fire for third. Logano with one final shot for Hamlin in the win at Richmond.
Checkered flag is waving at the start-finish line out front when it mattered the most, thanks to a wicked fast pit stop and Denny Hamlin across the line, and he will win the Toyota Owners 400.
I loved our chances. I mean, I certainly, you know, we still won for Martin there. He was the deserving race winner, but man, you know, you give these pit crews an opportunity, and this is what it's all about, is that you got to have your whole team put together, and man, they just killed it today.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you, coming off of an Easter short track racing weekend at Richmond Raceway in Virginia. And what a weekend it was. Now we're going to change locations. Go to the other side of the Commonwealth for a trip to the Paperclip at the Martinsville Speedway. We got lots coming up for you here on the show today. We're going to relive all the action from Sunday's Toyota Owners 400 with the NASCAR Live Backtracks. We're going to check in with Shane Van Gisbergen. This is his first full-time year in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, running some part-time cup efforts as well. We'll check in with SVG. We'll also play a clip from our latest episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History, our tracing back of the 2004 NASCAR Nextel Cup Series season. Ryan Preece is going to stop by. Plus, we will dive into the legacy of the Martinsville hot dog. Buckle up for that, kids. But first, Kyle Rickey is here with a check of the latest headlines in NASCAR. Kyle, what do you have for us?
Mike, this week at the Martinsville Speedway, the Dash for Cash will return for its first race of 2024. The in-race incentive is a $100,000 bonus awarded to the highest finisher of the four qualified NASCAR Xfinity Series drivers. This past weekend, the competitors who raced their way into eligibility include Chandler Smith, Eric Almirola, Jesse Love, and Parker Kligerman. NASCAR Cup Series regulars are not allowed to compete in Saturday's event due to the Dash for Cash incentive at the Martinsville Speedway. This weekend, Junior Motorsports will have another new face competing behind the wheel of the number 88 in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Short track ace and two-time Cars Tour champion Carson Quapel will make his series debut for the organization. Quapel is the son of longtime NASCAR driver Travis Quapel. And one driver who will do double duty this weekend is Sammy Smith. Not only will he be competing in his full-time Xfinity ride on Saturday for Junior Motorsports, Smith will make the first of four appearances for Spire Motorsports in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. In addition to his Friday night run at Martinsville, Smith will compete for the organization at North Wilkesboro Speedway, Indianapolis Raceway Park, and the Milwaukee Mile. Mike.
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, we'll relive all the thrills from Sunday night's Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond.
Kyle Kyle Larson brings his Chevy and four tires to Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Ryan's not here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Denny Hamlin took the checkered flag once again under the lights at his home track of Richmond Raceway on Sunday evening, but it wasn't a win that was well-received by his teammate Martin Truex Jr. Let's replay all of the action from Sunday night's race with another edition of a NASCAR Live Backtracks.
36 cars on the race team. 36 race teams are ready to go.
All right, man. I guess we're doing this. I wanted to break. Come right back to you.
All right, everybody. Have a good night. Do the best I can for you out here. Let you know if it's drying up or all that stuff. So this will be interesting. Be fun. Yeah, boys, you guys be safe in there. I know it's still a little wet, so be careful. Good luck.
Two by two as the pace car hits the pit lane. Eyes on Joey Aycock on top of the flag stand. Green flag is in the air, and we're racing the Toyota Owners 400. From the inside lane, pole sitter Kyle Larson gets away with a race lead.
Bubba Wallace will not give it up on the outside. Side by side at the line. Bubba Wallace on the outside. Kyle Larson on the inside.
They've got a two-car length breakaway over Alex Bowman, who rides in position number three. Larson leaning on Bubba coming out of turn number two. Bowman's got the best seat in the house for this one, with Wallace a fender out in front back to three.
Neither driver is going to give it up right now. The egos are on full display. This lap is going to be led by Kyle Larson by a bumper. They race back to turn number one.
Neither driver giving an inch right now. Bubba Wallace on the outside. Kyle Larson on the outside. Now Wallace will swing wide. Larson angles a bit lower. They'll separate themselves, but they're still now back at it in three.
Man against man, machine against machine, a Chevy on the inside, Toyota on the outside, Kyle Larson, Bubba Wallace, lap after lap, side by side, wheel to wheel.
What a great race for the lead here, lap 52 at Richmond. Wallace fender out in front. Larson's going to run with him down low. Here's Larson, gets the advantage halfway off the end of the back straightaway. Kyle Larson back to the lead.
He's going to come with a big run here. It works better in three and four to pin the bottom. If you need it, you are clear. Still clear. He's diving. Hang on. Gas up. Come on.
Oh, trouble turn number one.
Caution's out.
One car goes up. Josh Berry got into the back corner of the Daniel Suarez car, and Suarez goes for a long, smoking slide all the way around turns one and two. Looked like a drift racer trying to keep that car pointed in the right direction. Couldn't do it, but Josh Berry went to the inside of Suarez going into turn number one.
I don't know. He just kept on coming down the track.
He makes the decision to cut me off in the hill.
They come across the line this way. Stage win number three on the season for Kyle Larson. He picks up the green and white checkered flag and the points that go with it.
He does not want to be the first car a lap down to get a free pass. He wants to finish the stage on the lead lap, fighting tooth and nail. Final lap, stage number two for the race leader, Martin Truex Jr.
Bowman digging deep, trying to stay on the lead lap. Truex digging just as hard, trying to pin him a lap down, side by side. They mirror each other. Bowman not giving up here this time through.
Still three back to the 16, 48 still fighting, the 19 off right now. They're two wide up there, coming back to green checker.
Green and white checkered flag is going to be waving at the start finish line. This is stage win number one in 2024 for Martin Truex Jr. As he comes across the line, Truex scores the stage two win.
Green checker here. I believe the 19 got him.
Oh, good race all the way down to the grass here in the front side. Truex dives to the bottom on Larson.
Larson's trying to hang on to the spot. Truex is trying to force the issue, and it'll work for a moment out of two. Here's Larson back to the outside, but he's got to yield. Truex will grab the lead in a bold move off the end of the front straightaway.
So this battle right now, not yet for the lead, but it may be for the win overall, and the advantage is going to go to Martin Truex Jr. He was not going to be denied. He came off of pit road behind Kyle Larson, and then outraced him off of turn two, down the back straightaway, and Alex Hayden Truex is driving like this is his race to lose.
One eye through the windshield, one eye in the rearview mirror. You got to watch the front and the back. And right now, Martin Truex Jr. still cannot get by Chastain and company, and that car is starting to fade. The Truex car is starting to slip and slide a bit on corner exit.
Definitely feel like I hurt my tires more this run, being in traffic the whole time.
Copy.
I just said that to Alex Hayden, Mike Bagley, that I don't think it's because he doesn't want to get by Ross. I'm not sure he can get by Ross.
Just sliding a lot more. Loose in, tight center, loose off.
Joey Logano and Denny Hamlin slowly beginning to reel in the leader.
Truex just started to run to the inside of Chastain off of two. He slipped, backs away, regroups. Now we'll try again on the straightaway.
Still there, short, quarter. Still there, quarter. You'll get him here on exit. You're going to have 33 laps to go run down Truex. You're clear. He's about 6 laps away from getting the heavy traffic. 33 to go.
Rusty Wallace, how challenging is this for Martin Truex Jr., knowing that the second and third place cars are closing in?
Oh, man, this has got to be so frustrating to be leading all day long and looking so good. He's just got to get around Chastain and get in front of him. Now it looks like he's got it coming down the back straightaway, going into turn three. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but at least he got ahead of Chastain just then.
Two to go here. Still tight, two here. Still tight, quarter, clear. It's funny.
Off the corner, it's Kyle Larson on the front straightaway. Larson spins.
Caution's out. Keep it straight. Keep coming here.
Caution is out with two to go. We're going to overtime at Richmond Raceway. Heartbreak for Martin Truex Jr.
Gotta be kidding me.
It was Kyle Larson coming off turn four. He got the car sideways. I call trouble. Looks like he corrected and then completely lost the back end and spun down to the wet grass. Larson finally able to grab a gear and drive away.
All right, bring it to us here. Bring it to us. Make sure you have your right pan on.
Truex is on pit road. Jason Toy is there.
They definitely call this one the money stop. Right side tires going on for Martin Truex Jr. Was not happy with the handling of the race car in traffic. He was very tight. Took him a long time to get around some lap. Cars in front of him. A little slow on the left rear. It's a drag race off the pit lane here on this end between him and Joey Logano, Steve Post.
Here's Kyle Larson in that very first pit box. Bubba Wallace is in getting pit service. As we look up pit road, it is a race off from pit road, and we'll see who's going to do it. Denny Hamlin. Hamlin wins the race off from pit road. Truex goes out second. Logano goes out third. Chase Elliott and William Byron go out side by side. How about the Denny Hamlin crew? They're fist bumping, they're high-fiving, they're jumping up and down here. Denny Hamlin's crew wins the battle off from pit road.
Hell yeah, boys.
All right, man, coming to it here. Be a green-white checker. Make sure you got tools, switches where you need. Rad fan, alternator off here. Remember, he just has to launch first.
Here we go at the Richmond Raceway. Overtime to settle it. Denny Hamlin and his teammate, Martin Truex Jr., they see the green flag, and we are underway.
He went early.
Two to go here at Richmond in overtime. Hamlin trying to get away from his teammate.
Side by side for the lead. Hamlin on the bottom. Truex up top. Hamlin's going to run it wide. Hamlin now comes off the wall as they race off the end of the back straightaway. Cars bumping and grinding back to the corner.
Off turn four, Denny Hamlin has the lead. White flag is in the air. Next flag ends it. Hamlin by a car length. Here comes Joey Logano.
Joey Logano down to the inside of the racetrack. He'll power underneath Martin Truex Jr. He'll take second. Truex under fire for third. Logano with one final shot for Hamlin and the win at Richmond.
Checkered flag is waving at the start-finish line out front when it mattered the most, thanks to a wicked fast pit stop and Denny Hamlin across the line, and he will win the Toyota Owners 400.
That's how you win a race, team. That's how you win a race, team. Way to go.
He jumped the start, James.
Yes, he did. He went way before a restart, so.
Yeah, well, they better do something about it.
Wow, way to go, guys. That's you, big crew.
That finish has been quite the discussion this week across the NASCAR landscape. Coming up, SVG, Shane Van Gisbergen will join the show.
Craftsman in your hand after stopping, yeah. Not a chair, creaky stair, only the engine repair. Craftsman in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make it long, make it John, or that kitchen hat on. Craftsman in your hand after stopping, yeah.
outdoor care to home and auto repair. Do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. So glad you're spending your Tuesday night with us here on the Motor Racing Network. Last week at the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Uptown Charlotte, NASCAR announcing, along with the NASCAR Hall of Fame, a new exhibit that will recognize the inaugural Chicago Street Race. Of course, the winner of that historic event was none other than Shane Van Gisbergen. SVG is now racing full-time in the NASCAR Xfinity Series while also running select NASCAR Cup Series events. He caught up with our Steve Post last week at the Hall.
Shane, big picture, even beyond racing, the last 9 months of your life, can you even describe what that's been like?
Yeah, a whirlwind, like how everything's changed since the Chicago snowballed into the program we've got this year. Yes, pretty exciting, you know, having to move countries and pack up all my stuff and bring girlfriend over and my dog and everything and come to a completely different world of racing. It's been pretty exciting, but the challenge of it all and having to learn something every week and try and get better, try and adapt to life and fit into racing, it's been pretty cool.
We saw the social media post of your dog, which when we say dog, that's a mammoth dog. The personal transition of it and everything like that, are you settled in? Are you getting settled? American life, what has that been like?
Yeah, I love it. And I love, you know, the racing style every week. Just, you know, go on a Friday and 3 days at the track and, you know, get the job done, come back. It's been really cool. And, just so different. And yeah, normally we'd have 3 or 4 weeks between races and, you know, doing so much stuff outside of racing, whereas now it's purely racing, focusing, and yes, pretty enjoyable.
Is that probably the biggest takeaway, or are there other big takeaways with NASCAR racing that you've learned over the course of this beginning of the season?
Probably the difference between tracks, styles of racing, length, and then the difference between Xfinity cars and Cup cars is massive as well. And then the prep with the simulators is what you don't see as a fan or an outsider of the sport. It's amazing the technology that the teams have and what Chevrolet and the other OEMs have. Seeing how much prep goes on behind the scenes, I didn't expect that. It's very impressive.
You're kind of interesting in that we talk a lot of times about drivers making the move from Xfinity to the Cup Series. You actually kind of have done it a little bit backward. What are some of the key differences between the Cup Series cars and the Xfinity cars?
Oh, yeah, where do you start? They're so different. The way the rear end is and, you know, even the front, the suspension setup. And the Cup cars are kind of similar to what I had in Australia, but very different still. But the way the independent rear end is and the bolt together three-piece chassis type of thing, the supercar was similar to that. But, yeah, the Xfinity was, radical in comparison, the way they set the rear ends up on the ovals to move and create side force and stuff. And then on the road course, you know, how funky they feel. They turn different left and right, you know. It's, weird.
You made your Cup Series 2024 debut down at COTA a couple of weeks ago. Just describe that. I know the race didn't go the way you wanted it to, but having the time to prepare and get ready to go, just kind of describe how that went.
Yeah, it was really cool. Looking back, we probably focused on the wrong areas. We were fast in some sections of the track, but not fast where we needed to be on the others, and that hurt us for passing, but our outright lap speed wasn't too bad. But just couldn't get track position. But I feel like everyone has that story and what ifs, you know. But I think genuinely we were fourth to eighth place car if we got everything perfect. But we had way too many issues, and I made a couple of mistakes too. But thankfully we get another go soon. But the racing was just awesome. The way everyone is in the Cup Series, every lap's on the limit, and I really enjoy that. Yeah.
The Cup Series race, of course, you had that. You had the Xfinity Series race, and you got introduced firsthand to a little good old-fashioned NASCAR beating and banging. What's your take on that? It's what we live with. It seems to be part of our life. But what's your take as a guy coming in and finding yourself in the middle of that with Austin Hill?
Yeah, it was interesting getting involved in that for the first time. And I knew I was in for it when the yellow came out. You know, it was a comfortable lead, I guess, and we were managing, and then I knew we were in for it. I knew it was gonna go crazy, and sure enough, first restart was pretty wild, and then the second one we just got used up and pushed around. So it's pretty wild, but that's how it is here. And as I was saying before, the mentality change of being able to hit someone back or push someone else around, it's something I need to adapt to and get used to, I guess.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, in supercar racing, that's a no-no, and even the way it's officiated is different.
Every other series in the world, it's like that. It's just NASCAR, it's not. Yeah, like, I've never ever raced in anything where you're allowed to move someone on purpose and not get penalized for it. So, you know, it's good and bad because it's self-policing, but it's also, you know, it's how it is here. So I need to get used to that. Pretty different.
Who are some of the people, whether they're native Australians or New Zealanders or people here that you've leaned on that have kind of helped you through this transition of racing?
Yeah, it's been a few. Marcus Ambrose is probably the main guy. I speak to him most weeks, and he's been amazing. And then, you know, Kevin Harvick's good, and my trackhouse teammates are all great. And then for general life stuff, it's probably Scotty McLaughlin. He's been through a similar transition and moving here and just, you know, setting up bank accounts, social security numbers and visas and all that kind of stuff. So it's just so different here how everything is. But once you set up, it's fine. It's just a process to get it all.
Does it strike you as ironic that the NASCAR Hall of Fame has an exhibit with you featured in it, the Chicago Street Race exhibit, a new exhibit at the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
Yep.
What is that like for a guy that's got all of three cup races, but here you are in the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
It's amazing. It's a real privilege. And before Chicago, I come through here just to have a look at it all. And, to now have something in there is epic. And from my first race as well, it's pretty special to have contributed something. It was a pretty historic moment for NASCAR doing their first street race, and to be a part of it as much as we were is really cool.
Final question for you. This thing has evolved. It was going to be part trucks, part Xfinity, part Cup. Now it's full Xfinity. Are there additional, we haven't heard Cars Tour mentioned. Are there additional things that you would like to do as you get it, or is there no more room on the plate for that stuff?
No, more racing's good. Like to, you know, maybe do some sprint car stuff too, but I'll see. I don't know if Justin and Ty are too keen for that in season, but definitely end of season I'll go back to New Zealand, do some hopefully. I just want to keep racing. Racing every week is the dream, and I've been enjoying it so far.
Well, congratulations on the success, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Posty. Coming up, a clip from our latest episode of our podcast series, NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Hey, everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Monday, Motor Racing Network dropped the seventh installment of our new podcast series, NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. This podcast relives that season, a season filled of drama, heartbreak, tragedy. This week's episode takes you through the beginning of the NASCAR Nextel Cup Series chase for a championship, highlighting wins for Kurt Busch, Ryan Newman, and a costly post-race interview for Dale Earnhardt Jr. Here's a sneak listen of episode 7. Late in the Alabama afternoon, Dale Jr. continued to set the pace as the white flag flew, and he was one lap away from holding off a hard-charging Kevin Harvick with the full support of a raucous Talladega crowd behind him.
One lap to go, but they're chasing Dale Jr.
Kevin Harvick now is the man in second. Jr. right up next to the wall. The crowd absolutely losing its mind on the back chute. Here comes Jr. off turn two with a rear view full of Kevin Harvick.
One car into the wall off turn two. Greg Biffle gets turned. He'll collect one or two other machines halfway down the back straightaway as Dale Earnhardt Jr. leads Kevin Harvick by a car length back to three.
It's Chevrolet's up front. Kevin Harvick is trying to do everything he can to run down Jr. Jr. runs the bottom. Harvick is right. Dale Jared trying to lend drafting help, but here comes the Budweiser Chevrolet. The crowd on their feet. Jr. is headed for the checkers.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. trying to pick up the win at Talladega Super Speedway. Kevin Harvick doing all he can, and all he can do is fall in behind and follow the Budweiser Chevy across the line. Junior does it again. And at the line, Elliott Sadler flips completely over, lands back on all four tires,
continues to roll along. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has won at Talladega.
Well, it's Gatorade Victory Lane, but it's also Budweiser Victory Lane as Dale Earnhardt Jr. getting a lot of the Budweiser flowing down here. Tell you what, I got to ask you first, when you restarted 14th, were you worried about being able to get back up to the front?
Yeah, I was. I didn't know whether we had what it took, but we put two tires on that caution and I drove right around them guys that had old tires on. And good call by Tony Jr. Great pit stops today, man. That thing come out first every time. Them fans down there in turn one was cheering like hell.
Tell us about those last 10 laps. Where you passed the guys? Where was the car the strongest?
Well, I had the brand new rights on it, and it just drove around the corner so much better than old tires them other guys had. I knew the top was where it was at. I mean, we everybody had that figured out, and I just went up there and took every run I got until I didn't have nobody else to pass and just tried to do what I could to stay there.
How about that call to take on two tires? Tony Sr. said you guys had just a few seconds to make that call. Were you worried about that you came back further out?
No, I wasn't worried about it, man. They make the calls. I just drive the car. I drive it as hard as I can drive it. But, you know, if we didn't win, we didn't win. But I'm just glad to get back on top of Talladega, man. It's my place. Alabama, baby.
While Dale Earnhardt Jr. managed to keep his language clean during his Victory Lane interview with MRN, he was unable to do the same when on television with NBC. Earnhardt Jr.'s use of obscenity placed NASCAR in the uncomfortable position to make an example out of one of the sport's favored sons. Earlier in 04, NASCAR and several television products were on high alert following a wardrobe malfunction involving Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake during halftime of the Super Bowl. NASCAR made it clear to all of its drivers that obscene language and gestures would not be tolerated at all. Johnny Sauter, then a NASCAR Busch Series driver, would learn the hard way as he faced a penalty. Unfortunately, for Dale Earnhardt Jr., he'd also have to face the same consequences of a 25-point penalty for his violation. Former NASCAR president Mike Helton discussed NASCAR's decision to penalize Jr.
So it was obvious at the end of the race what he said in Victory Lane. And any penalty we've got, I don't care if it's a crew chief, a driver, team owner, we don't want to do those. That's not what we're here for. We're not here to find issues to react to. We're here just to put the best, most level set of circumstances for everybody. And whether it was Sauter or Dale Jr. that crossed that line didn't matter. It had to be. We said this is what we were obligated to enforce, and we said what we were going to do, so we have to say what we say we're going to do. And it wasn't fun. It wasn't easy. Next day I called Dale up and I said, sorry, but. And then Dale's the type of guy that takes and takes a situation and doesn't fight back too much. He may not like it, and he'll tell you he don't like it, but he understands the responsibilities. And he didn't, the way he used it in Victory Lane, it was paying tribute to his father. It just happened to be one wrong word in a whole beautiful terminology he used in that respect.
You can catch that full episode right now. NASCAR Live presents 2004 Chasing History, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Coming up, Ryan Preece will join us.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Prior to NASCAR's short track swing concluding this weekend, I had a chance to catch up with Ryan Preece over the weekend in Richmond to discuss the start of his second full-time season of racing at Stewart-Haas Racing, along with his thoughts on Martinsville and the weeks to come. Well, we're closing in on short track season. Matter of fact, we're in the middle of it. When we think short tracks, we think of Ryan Preece. What do you think, Ryan Preece, about short track season this time of year, not only on the national level, but on the local level as well?
Yeah, I mean, all the short tracks are really getting going right now, right? It's springtime, and up in the Northeast, they tend to get started early April, and it's very fitting for us on a national level that we start at the end of March. So, you know, when the schedule came out, I really looked at it and was like, man, this whole, you know, beginning or middle of March to the middle of April kind of fits my style. So certainly with Richmond and Martinsville coming up, Martinsville, we were able to get the pole there lead until we got that penalty. And we had a lot of speed, SHR as a whole, at Martinsville last year. So I think we all have high hopes, high expectations going into it. And, you know, maybe we can finally get that result we've been looking for.
What do you remember about that day? I know the accolades, the laps led, the up front, but yeah. What at that moment, what did that do for the race team?
Well, yeah, I mean, from a morale standpoint, having speed, leading laps, contending, doing all the things right there, that was big for us. I think the biggest takeaway was learning that you could speed off of what I thought was pit box one. It was actually pit stall two. So it was getting to 35 mile an hour. You can get a pretty good launch and still speed there. But it was you know, it was a direction of what we needed. Certainly, like I said, it showed that we're all really good at Martinsville.
Does the juices get flowing when you get to a short track? I know that's your background. That's what you grew up racing on. But does that give a little extra pep in the step when you come to tracks like Martinsville?
Well, I think the expectations are set really high, right? You know, it's no secret. When we go to mile and a half, so we're still trying to find that happy place for us and that comfort that we're looking for. But when we go to short tracks, you know, whether it's Richmond, Bristol, Martinsville, those are all places that I've won at in a modified, as well as ran well in the cup cars at. So it's just, you know, the confidence is a big thing in racing. Many people don't quite understand that, but if you're really confident going into a weekend, typically the speed and all the other things come along with it.
So we're past, you know, 6-7 races into the books already in the Cup Series. Ford, brand new car. What's your assessment right now of the dark horse? What's your assessment of the season so far?
Well, it's crazy to think, even with that penalty, we're ahead of where we were last year, even though it's not where we want to be, but certainly it shows that there is, you know, our teams, it's kind of sprinkled around, right? Las Vegas, Noah had a lot of speed. Chase and Noah both were able to qualify really well at Phoenix. Bristol, I felt like we were really good and got stage points. So it was just, it's putting it all together. It's trying to put the combination, find your happy place, because when you make a body change like this, from the outside looking in, it seems like such a simple thing. But there's so much that goes into it from an engineer standpoint, for the crew chiefs, for all these guys, to find that balance that we need at short tracks, at mile and a half, at road courses, super speedways. It's just trying to navigate that and find the trends you need. And you know, typically, I would say in the middle of March, the end of March, you got to find those balances because come May, June, July, it can either be really good months for you or it could be really long months. So I feel like we found the right direction.
When you have a four-car team like Stewart Haas, I think a lot of race fans see other four-car teams and all the cars are performing right around each other. But a lot of times it's not. Like, for instance, Kevin, when he was in the four car, his performance would be one place and then others would be other places. Why is it not synced up across the board? What's the differentiator between the cars, the drivers, and the efforts?
Because all of us drive different. We all have different driving styles that we all look for. That's probably, you know, typically why I am able to do certain things at short tracks that others might not. But certainly at mile and a half, so other people, the way I drive a race car versus them, I can get myself in trouble pretty quick at a mile and a half by being too loose. So it's just driving style. It's finding the balance, communication, and all those things that add up. So certainly, you know, we're working towards to where all four of us are around each other. We'd love it, you know, at the end of a weekend where we're all in the top 10 or, you know, able to do what JGR has done at Bristol, where they were all, you know, first, second, third, fourth, right? But it's a building thing. I feel like in society and in the world right now, we want immediate results, but sometimes that's not necessarily the case. It's like a kid coming out of college expecting a job that a guy who has 20 years of experience has, right? So it's certainly something that you got to work towards.
So when you put max effort in, which is something you do, everybody on the team does, and the results don't match, how do you manage the emotions that come along with that? And how long has it taken you to manage those?
Oh, I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to manage and understand those expectations. And I think that really comes with time, with age, maturity, as well as just understanding every weekend's a new weekend and trying to set those expectations based off of how practice and qualifying goes. And if you hit on something, you try to understand why. So certainly, I mean, you look across all forms of motorsports, whether it's Formula One, NASCAR, everywhere, it's a really important piece.
Now, before we let you go, I think we need to bring America into this, that you and I have recently discovered our love of coffee together. Let the world know what the ideal coffee order is for Orion Priest.
Just black iced coffee. I can't drink hot coffee, but I go to Dunkin' Donuts every morning. It doesn't matter what state I'm in, what track I'm at. If I'm in the Northeast, the Southeast, I am a loyal Dunkin' guy. And actually, you and I like to compare our points with how many we've been earning. So, it's just I started going to race shops when I was really young because my father used to bring me in our town of Berlin, Connecticut, and you wouldn't believe the amount of local racers there are there. And that was always the thing. My father and I would go get the coffee before we went, and it hasn't changed however many years later.
How many cups are you good for a day?
2 to 3.
Ooh, I'm 6.
Oh, you got me beat there.
That's the only thing I've got to beat at. Hey, we appreciate you joining us. I know it's been an uphill climb. I know it's been a challenge this year, but just looking around, the effort is there. Let's hope the results are coming. By the way, where do you feel that if you get synced up, is this a short track, mile and a half, road course? Where do you think the results could come? Where would you like them to come?
From a comfort standpoint, short tracks. I just think from my level of experience at all these ones that we've gone to, it's definitely there. But, I understand Chad's background and all those things. His mile and a half speed is something that he really, really looks for. And, I feel like that once we hit on that balance, we should be really good.
Appreciate Ryan taking the time out to visit with me over the weekend at Richmond. Coming up, an ode to the Martinsville hot dog.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Through the years, the hot dog has become synonymous with Martinsville Speedway. For decades, race fans have enjoyed intense racing at the paperclip while also devouring a bright red hot dog topped with mustard, chili, coleslaw, and onions, all for the low price of $2. Our Susie Armstrong joins us now to get drivers' perspectives on the legacy of an all-beef Frank at one of NASCAR's most famous racetracks.
There aren't many things that go better together than an all-American hot dog and a NASCAR race. This weekend, that will be in focus more so than other weekends because all three of NASCAR's top series head to the hot dog capital of the NASCAR circuit, Martinsville Speedway. The Martinsville hot dog has become something of a legend throughout the garage and fan base. The Martinsville dog features their signature hot dog topped with chili, onions, mustard, and slaw. The hot dog is so popular that track president Clay Campbell says the Speedway can sell 55,000 of them on a good weekend. With those dogs in mind, we asked some of NASCAR's best drivers some of the most pressing questions in the hot dog community. Let's start with 2021 Cup Series champion Kyle Larson. Larson has sampled the Martinsville dog in the past, but is more likely to enjoy a Frankfurter on the golf course.
I've probably only had like two, and I would think that was probably the first weekend that I ever raced there just because I had to try it. So I'm not really like a hot dog kind of guy. I might have like one or two a year just like on the golf course, but the color of the hot dogs kind of scare me away at Martinsville.
The best place to enjoy a hot dog wasn't the only thing on drivers' minds. The toppings themselves were a big part of conversation. Reigning Xfinity Series champion Cole Custer is always down for a Martinsville hot dog, minus one of the toppings.
For toppings, I'm usually pretty simple. Usually ketchup, mustard, relish. But when you go to Martinsville, I usually get the classic, you know, but I don't like the slaw. The only thing I don't like is the slaw at the Martinsville hot dog.
William Byron grew up attending races at the Paperclip, but he enjoys his hot dog in a much simpler fashion than what the track offers.
I'm just plain, so I just like maybe a little bit of ketchup, but for me, just plain hot dog.
While Byron enjoys a plain dog no matter the situation, Tyler Reddick takes a much more regional approach when he seeks out a hot dog.
It kind of just depends, like Martinsville, you know, all the way is great. I think it just depends on where you're at. Like if you're in Chicago, you get it that way. I think I just, whatever's the style that's popular in that region, you know, that's how I would do it.
Now that we've got the best toppings and place to have a hot dog out of the way, we can now literally dig into the meat of the matter and debate what has taken the country by storm over the past few years. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Cole Custer has a simple answer and even wonders where the debate started.
A hot dog is not a sandwich. I don't know who came up with that, but I don't think of a sandwich whenever I eat a hot dog. I know that.
For Byron, the hot dog belongs in its own category.
No, it's a hot dog, I think. It's different.
Byron's teammate Alex Bowman wonders if a hot dog would be better described as a different meat and vessel delicacy.
I mean, by definition, technically, I mean, it could also be a taco.
While Byron and Bowman are somewhat lighthearted in their responses, Austin Sindrick might be the biggest detractor in the garage to the hot dog is a sandwich camp.
A hot dog is not a sandwich. The hot dog is the actual wiener itself. Like the bun is the vessel that makes it, you know, that's just brings it to, it's not a sandwich. It's like saying a taco is a sandwich. So anyway, not a sandwich.
Well, Sindrick's answer was very philosophical. Nothing will get you thinking more than Tyler Reddick's take on the debate.
The thing is, depending on where you get a sandwich from, it's similar shape, right? Similar layout. Like, I think of when you get, like, a shrimp po' boy or, like, you know, a lobster roll. People refer to them as sandwiches. So other than the ingredients, what's really the difference? That's the issue that I ponder. I think it's going to break me to give you an answer on if it's a sandwich or not, because I don't know if I'll ever know that answer for myself in this lifetime.
Just like Reddick, the world will probably never truly know whether a hot dog is really a sandwich or if the hot dog belongs in the sandwich family, the taco family, or a category all its own. Regardless, thousands of whatever it is will be enjoyed this weekend in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
There will be many a Martinsville hot dog consumed this weekend. Coming up, we'll relive the 2004 Advance Auto Parts 500.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Before we shut things down for the week, let's dial up 2004 in the MRN time machine. Let's take you back to the 2004 Advance Auto Parts 500 at Martinsville.
Out of turn number three and back into the straightaway for Rusty Wallace. 13 laps to go, and as we said, these are the longest laps that Rusty Wallace will ever run. It's been such a long time since he's been to Victory Lane. I guarantee he's hearing all kinds of noises and everything else going through his mind. Can I do it this afternoon? He's looking good right now in turn three.
He's bypassed Morgan Shepherd. Now he closes in on Derek Cope, but Bobby Labonte is definitely closing in.
12 laps to go now. Rusty Wallace crosses the line, looks back. It is 7/10 of a second. Back to Bobby Labonte, so he is closing in. Dale Earnhardt Jr. has gone by Jimmy Johnson, has long since passed him. He's another second and a half back. Then Johnson, then that ongoing race for the fifth spot in turn three.
And they are four deep for that one. Ryan Newman, Jeff Gordon, Jamie McMurray, and Matt Kenseth. Newman up the racetrack. Gordon dives down on the inside.
Really hard to know what you want to watch here in the closing laps at Martinsville with 11 laps to go. You want to see if Rusty can stay ahead of Bobby Labonte. Right now, he's doing it by some 8 or 9 car lengths. Then you look back a little further at what Earnhardt Jr. is doing. He's gotten away from everybody right now and has third place pretty well locked up here for the minute. Jimmy Johnson is fourth. Scramble's going to be for fifth place, and that's out of turn number four. Ryan Newman on the outside groove. Jeff Gordon had thoughts of getting down underneath him, and Jamie McMurray's in that scramble, a three-car tussle off in turn two.
All those cars cannot stay down to the inside of the racetrack. Everyone's sliding up, so no one able to make a move. Here comes Ryan Newman, Jeff Gordon, and Jamie McMurray stacked up nose to tail. Again, Newman slides up, and Gordon tries the inside lane.
9 laps to go for Rusty Wallace. Adam Alexander, what are they saying in his pits? Any concern?
Well, I don't think there's any concern, Joe. Larry Carter sitting up above the pit box here. Very cool, calm, and collected. Larry, closing it on the end. Are you confident you can win this thing?
Well, I just hope it stays green and, you know, don't have any more trouble. And, I believe Rusty will get it done.
You would never believe this is a team who has not been to Victory Lane in just about 3 years. They're very cool and calm down here, standing on the pit wall, anticipating Rusty Wallace's 7th victory at Martinsville.
Marty, I'm kind of like you. I feel like that even if Bobby Labonte caught him, I believe that would be the hardest car to pass in the history of racing.
It will be the widest car he's ever tried to get around, I can assure you of that. 7 laps to go for Rusty Wallace and the rest of the field. Bobby Labonte is getting a little closer, make it 2 to 3 car lengths behind right now. Earnhardt Jr. not gaining any ground, not losing any in third place back there. That scramble we talked about, the best, hardest racing going on between right now Ryan Newman and Jeff Gordon over in turn three.
Gordon squeezes a fender down inside of Ryan Newman. They're side by side, but lap traffic directly ahead.
Racing there for the fifth position. Jeff Gordon trying to come back and at least finish today in the top five. He's right up alongside Ryan Newman now, working off turn two.
Jamie McMurray, Matt Kenseth, Sterling Marlin, Dale Jarrett all have a front row seat for this battle that takes place behind Derek Cope. Now Joe Nemechek is in that mix as well. And Newman and Gordon try to thread the lap cars 3 wide and 4.
Really hard to believe that some of those guys have not made enough contact to spin out 3 or 4 cars in a row up through there. But thus far, they're racing hard, but they're racing clean here at Martinsville. Laps go down to just 5 remaining for Rusty Wallace as he heads up to turn 3.
Here he comes off turn number 4. Bobby Labonte, 3 car lengths behind, looking for the lead in the wind.
It's down to a half second now between Rusty Wallace and Bobby Labonte, and there are only 4 laps remaining. They're back in turn 2.
And the good news is, for both these drivers, no lap traffic is in immediate future, although Scott Riggs and Kevin Harvick about a half a straightaway ahead. But Rusty Wallace and Bobby Labonte going to fight this out amongst themselves as they come off turn 4.
Bobby Labonte gets just a little bit closer, make it a couple of car lengths behind Rusty Wallace. 3 laps to go. He may be able to catch him, but getting around, as we said, may be another thing. Let's pick him up in turn 2.
Rusty Wallace and Bobby Labonte come on to the back straightaway. 3 car lengths apart, make that 4. Rusty taking a harder line into the corner. Labonte sliding up, doing everything he can to catch the race leader.
Labonte definitely closing in on Rusty Wallace, but they cross the start-finish line, only 2 laps remaining, and Rusty got to be feeling confident right now.
Sliding up off the inside lane of the racetrack, here comes Rusty Wallace onto the back straightaway. 3 car lengths still the distance between Rusty Wallace and Bobby Labonte as they head off the end of the back stretch.
Don't believe Bobby Labonte's got anything for him on this final lap as they come down to see the white flag fly, because Bobby would have been up there a lot quicker if he had. Rusty Wallace takes the white flag, maybe heading for victory lane after a long drought. Let's pick him up in turn 2.
Race fans are going wild on the backstretch in Martinsville. Rusty Wallace for the final time off the end of the backstretch has a 3-car length lead advantage over Bobby Labonte. Rusty Wallace going back to victory lane at Martinsville.
You can listen to that race in its entirety at MRN.com under shows and the MRN Classic Races tab. Like to thank Shane Van Gisbergen for being a part of the show this week. Also, our thanks to Ryan Preece for joining us. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for dialing us up as well. Don't forget, NASCAR Live Wide Open coming up this Thursday. Check it out wherever you download your podcasts. And we've got a busy racing weekend at Martinsville Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll talk to you then. And, of course, next Tuesday night at 7 Eastern right here on NASCAR Live. Until then, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.